following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Kesey, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast studio in Schenectady, New York. Well, it's conference finals time in both the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs, and we're going to talk a lot about that on this edition of the podcast. Our good friend Mark Keschesser from ESPN Radio, of course, a Gilderland High School graduate, he'll join us to talk about the NBA playoffs, and he's calling the Celtics-Pacers Eastern Conference Final for ESPN Radio. Well, he was also there Sunday at Madison Square Garden for the Pacers' demolishing of the New York Knicks in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. We'll talk to him about that and get his thoughts on that as on the entire playoffs as well. Of course, Western Conference, it's the Mavericks and the Timberwolves. Nobody, I don't think, at the beginning of the season thought that would happen. Well, the NHL's playoffs, well, the Eastern Conference Finals get underway Wednesday with the Rangers and Panthers, and then on Thursday it's the Oilers and Dallas Stars. We'll talk with Pierre McGuire. We'll look back at the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs and talk about the Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals. We'll have a lot of fun with that as well and talk some other hockey stuff with Pierre. We always enjoy having Pierre on the podcast. So coming up, Mark Keschesser talks NBA playoffs. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
Hi, I'm Rick Marshall from the Daily Gazette's Martial Arts Podcast. In each episode, I interview artists from around the region, from musicians and comedians to dancers, sculptors, even video game designers. After you finish the latest episode of the Parting Shots Podcast, I hope you'll give martial arts a try.
Want to get all the latest news from the Daily Gazette on your phone or tablet? We have an app for that. The Daily Gazette app allows you to read all the newspaper stories and columns from our dedicated team of journalists. The app is free. You can download the app from the Apple or Google App Stores.
Hi, this is Siena Women's Basketball Head Coach Terry Brim. You're listening to the Party Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Shots.
Welcome back to the podcast. The NBA playoffs are in their conference finals, and the New York Knicks almost got there, but injuries proved to be too much for them to overcome against the Indiana Pacers. Mark Keschesser, the voice of the NBA on ESPN Radio, and Gilderland High School graduate, was there to see that game, and he's calling the Eastern Conference Finals, and Kessie's nice enough to join us for a few minutes here on this Thursday. We're taping before Game 2 of the Celtics-Pacers game, and what a wild Game 1 there, Kessie, about between the Celtics and Pacers. I'll be honest, Pacers choked that one away.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. They it had to have been a little bit sleepless the last couple of nights, because you know the thin line between these wins and losses in these relative short series in a best of seven, and you know when it's happening in real time, and you know that, you know, Indiana's plus 20 in the turnover department, you know that it's, you know, a lot of self-inflicted wounds, and some of it is, hey, you got to tip your hat, Boston's a really good defensive team. But when you look at being up 3 points with 27 seconds to go, being up 3 points with 10 seconds to go, and the ball, you know, Jaylen Brown having to hit, you know, a tough corner shot, you know, toward the end to tie it and force overtime, and then you realize what a golden opportunity you lost, because you could feel it in the building. And I'm sure you could feel it watching on television or listening to us on the radio, that, you know, Indiana was imminently about to go up 1-0, you know, on the road, like we saw with Dallas last night at Minnesota. And now, you know, you don't get that. And that's, you know, one more game that of a blown opportunity after, you know, tremendous 7-game series with the Knicks. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens tonight in Game 2, because as we pointed out, you know, during the Game 1 broadcast, as it's happening, you know, we've seen many series. And the one that comes to mind for me was that Cleveland Golden State series when LeBron had 50 in Game 1 and they didn't get the win. I believe that was also an overtime game. And then Golden State ultimately swept that series, you know, and you're like, what could have been? And the same for Indiana. Like, you know, they've proven they can compete with Boston, but you know, you had a Celtics team that was off for a week. Wasn't as sharp. Certainly didn't, hit the shots they wanted to mostly down the stretch outside of the Jaylen Brown three-pointer, and you didn't steal that win. So all of a sudden, you got to come back. I know Boston hasn't won a game two yet in the previous two series, but you gave them a win, and now they get to tune up their game.
Yeah, and the Pacers were coming off that incredible, almost perfect game like Sunday, Game 7 against the Knicks. So you would think that they had that momentum going. They could have easily stolen Game 1.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, it changes. Just think of all the narratives that we didn't get to write or speak. Jason Tatum ends up scoring 10 points in the fourth quarter, and one of the big stories of the last 3 years, really, of postseasons for the Boston Celtics was, we call clutch time, 5 points within 5 minutes. And to be fair, they didn't have a lot of those games this year because they were so dominant. But in the games that were close, there were all these threads that we tied together with, too reliant on three-point shooting and, not driving to the basket and just not winning those games that were close. And here was one that they did. They executed down the stretch. Tatum gets another 5 minutes and completely changes what the narrative would have been of Boston down 0-1 at home, another close game that they almost choked away but lost. And remember, Tatum missed a couple of shots in the final minute of regulation. Mm-hmm. So he totally gets a change in narrative. And, that's just how – I mean, everything switched. We had Tatum on our air after the game. He classified it as an ugly game for Boston. So clearly they know that they were off the hook on this one. And now, they get to work on their own issues, which was, again, they had two decisive game one wins. And so sometimes it's easy to take your foot off the pedal, even though you shouldn't. And now they have a game one win, realizing twice before we've done it, we're not doing it tonight.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to that game seven, the Eastern second conference second round, that Knicks-Pacers game. The narrative there, all the home teams won all the games going into that game seven. How shocked were you that the Pacers played so well and the Knicks just looked like they ran out of gas?
I should not have been shocked. I think, if I take it back to the minutes before tip and OG Anunoby being announced, and it had that Willis Reed kind of feel, and Josh Hart, who clearly was, dealing with discomfort with, his abdominal strain from game six, and they're out there warming up. I think you're right. The big shock is that a team shot, 73% from the field for an entire first half on the road. That's the one you didn't expect. And Anunoby hit a couple of tough shots early on, but then it became clear, there was no way he was going to be able to defend and probably shouldn't have been out there on the floor at all. And saying all that, you get to the third quarter and, the Knicks make this run and all of a sudden they're within six and you're like, Indiana might cave and fall apart. And then Brunson breaks his hand or his thumb or, wherever he fractured. And then you start thinking, if the Knicks get through this, I mean, the Boston Celtics are enjoying watching this game seven. Not only are two teams, going at it to a seventh game, but you may get a Knicks team that has, so many injuries on it. It may be a walkover in the conference finals. So I think, for the Pacers to kind of stem that tide, shot the ball as well as they did, and win a road game, they're still a young team, even, with Miles Turner on the team and Pascal Siakam coming over in a trade. They're largely a team of guys who haven't been this far. And, that was a huge dragon to slay to go into the Garden, whether they, were injured or not, and pick up that win. And that was among the best shooting games, you can ever recall. You could talk about, was it Villanova in the championship game in the 80s? Yep. When they shot north of 70 to beat Georgetown. It had that feel of, you were watching one of the spectacular shooting displays in playoff history.
And the fans, I think they even realized that what was happening there, just with the injuries, and they just stayed around till the end, even though they knew the inevitable was going to happen. You got to give the fans a lot of credit for sticking around and saluting their team, because they gave them a lot of great games and memories this year.
you don't see that a lot. You know, I feel like you see it more in baseball, and you watch a lot more hockey than I do. But it feels like, you know, a lot of times the NBA crowd just kind of slink away when it looks like it's over. Yeah. And, you know, and especially, you know, in the Garden where people paid a lot of money, there's a lot of folks that just like to be there and be seen. But I think the true fans, and it felt like it was 90 to 95% of the arena. I think they got, you know, they knew it was over and they stayed because this was a team that kind of caught, you know, every once in a while. When you think about your favorite teams, college or professional, you know, that one particular team that you're like, wow, I really love watching them play. There's something about them. Maybe there's an intangible we can't put our finger on. And that was this Knicks team. And, you know, maybe it was overcoming all the injuries. Maybe it was Brunson kind of taking that next step, you know, to be among the, you know, the top five or six players in the NBA this year. And it was nice to see that appreciation because, I mean, if there was ever a tank that was on E, that was, I've driven a car before where it kind of coasted into the gas station down a hill where you're about 5 miles past expiration. And that's pretty much what the Knicks were.
Yeah. I mean, can this, once they get healthy over the offseason, can this team challenge in the East next season?
That's the fascinating part because they do have some decisions to make. They do have cap room, so they might be able to bring in, you know, a really good NBA star. And then, of course, when you do that, you start thinking about, hey, we're going to, you know, mess up with the chemistry here. But I think, yes, if you bring the team back and they get healthy, I don't think Brunson was a flash in the pan. I just think, you know, there's something special about him, even at his size. You know, whether it be the footwork, you know, he's just unafraid when he goes into the lane and does his thing. I would love to see that team at full strength. You know, there's some really I know the East doesn't get the fanfare that the West does, but, you know, I think that's a team that might have something there. So I would love to see them, you know, kind of run it back, if you will, and get healthy and have a full season of health. I mean, it's going to be hard to kind of have, I don't want to call it a Cinderella run, but it had that type of feel that they had that, you know, late season, regular season shot to the number two seed. And while things were kind of falling apart around them, you know, you had a sense that, you know, they had a real shot at full strength, or at least at certainly much more health than what they finished with, you know, could have given Boston some troubles in this round of the conference finals.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I know they took out my Sixers in six games, and the way they were shooting was just incredible. It seemed like they couldn't miss, especially from three-point range.
Yeah, that was a wild series. We got to do game two. I wish, you know, we could have done five as well. I mean, that was some of the stuff that went on in that series was, you know, I don't want to say legendary, but certainly memorable. That's probably the best word, memorable. Like, for a second-round series, you know, that's one where you'll be able to remember, you know, two or three of those games in great detail. That was a lot of fun. And that's another team also, as we know, your 76ers that, you know, need to have a little better health on their side moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And, well, it's baseball season. Phillies are playing well, so I'm not going to
It's Philly season. It's Yankee season. It's Mets season right now in the Northeast.
So let me ask you about the Pacers. I know the NBA in-season tournament was, you know, I think a gimmick, but the Pacers got to the championship game with it. I mean, how much can they draw from that, going through that to get to the finals, and here they are actually playing for a real championship?
You know, I kind of felt like you at the beginning of the question. I was a little sheepish when I brought it up to Rick Carlisle on our tape segment, you know, pregame for game one, just to get an idea of, you know, was that like a marker post, a mile post in the early part of the season when they beat Boston? They beat the Celtics in Indiana. It was a home game. It was the quarterfinals to get to Las Vegas. And he did agree. You know, he said, you know what, that certainly for this, again, there was no Pascal Siakam. So we'll say a team without any championship experience, you know, for them to beat the Celtics, who were, you know, off to this great start. And Boston really wanted to be in Vegas, you know, as whether you liked the in-season or you thought it was gimmicky, it was still, you know what, we've gotten this far. We don't mind a free trip to Las Vegas. We have no idea what to expect from this tournament, but we'd like to be there. And Boston, of course, was setting the tone at that part of the season. So, you know, for Indiana and for the Pacers, that was kind of that first little mile marker on their way to the conference finals that, you know, we can compete. with the best of the best. And remember, Tyrese Halliburton was off to a terrific start at that point. Mm-hmm. I don't think his numbers have been anywhere near that stage, excuse me, since, because, you know, shortly thereafter, I don't know if it was December or January when he went down with the leg injury. And if you look at his numbers since then, they haven't really come close to what he's been, even though he's had some good games here in the playoffs. So I think Rick agreed, and with your premise as well, that was a very important time of the season. You know, it still feels like it's 100 years ago, and it probably doesn't mean anything in the real scope of things, but he did mark it as one of those chapters where it's like, you know what, we got a pretty good team.
Well, the Lakers won it, and they got bounced in the first round, so it could be the equivalent of the NHL President's Trophy, where the President's Trophy winner doesn't win the Stanley Cup or get too far in the playoffs.
That's right. That's a great point. We'll have a run like 6 years from now where the in-season tournament winner doesn't even make the playoffs or doesn't win the championship or even come close to it. That's a good point.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about the Western Conference. Did anybody have the Timberwolves and the Mavericks playing for that race to get to the finals?
No, they didn't. Look, you know, we all thought that, look, when Denver was down 0-2, I think it changed a lot of people's minds where they're like, oh, Minnesota, this is a good team. We overlooked them. They've got some good players. They're just as big as Denver. I think, you know, we've discussed quite a bit that the GM of Minnesota was the GM of Denver. And so he built a team to build the team that he built. And so you're thinking, okay, you know, this is possible. And then, of course, you know, the Nuggets win three in a row and then are up 20, you know, in the third quarter of game seven. So that thing went back and forth with Minnesota. You know, Dallas is a different story. You know, we picked them up, PJ and I, late in that first round series against the Clippers. And I don't know too many, you know, who had predicted that Kyrie Irving was going to have a renaissance season like he has. And then, you know, Oklahoma City had the good year this year. Their kind of breakthrough season, though they were young and maybe a little bit smaller, but I still think, you know, folks still didn't think Dallas had enough to get through. And I think through these first two rounds of the playoffs, you know, not even speaking of their game one win over the Timberwolves in the conference finals, was that, you know, they made two great trades at the trade deadline. Luka's not healthy, but still plays through it. Kyrie's playing at a level that, you know, we haven't seen, you know, pre-pandemic. And now all of a sudden, you know, they've got a formidable team. So together, you're right. Nobody could have seen Dallas and Minnesota in the conference finals. But I think as we've gone through these playoffs and watched it a little more closely, you know, maybe shame on us that we didn't give them, you know, enough credit that they could get here. But it's exciting. I mean, you know, I love the fresh blood, if you will, of these four teams, and the fact that we've had, you know, two outstanding games to open up both conference finals. I hope it bodes well for fans, because we may not have the marquee names that we've had in the past. And you could argue Luka and Kyrie might, you know, be among the most marquee, and Tatum and Brown as well. But just seeing these other teams and one of them's going to hoist the trophy, I think has to be good for the league. I think so.
How shocking was it to see, as you mentioned, Denver had a 20-point lead in the third quarter, just to see them implode the way they did on their home court?
I never thought we would see – it's like there's some things that are constants when you're discussing, you know, who's going to be in the finals, who has a chance to win, who's the best player in the NBA. And a lot of those are Denver and Nikola Jokic. And, you know, Minnesota beat them at their own game. I mean, I was getting ready to go on a week-long road trip. So when it got to 20 in the third quarter, and I've been honest about this with all the folks here and anyone who's asked me, I turned off the television. I turned off the radio, and I went upstairs, and I went to pack, and I figured I would just, you know, catch the end of the game. And then I got a text from a 518 number, one of my good friends, you know, from Albany. Mm-hmm. And he said, can you believe how close this game has gotten? And I'm like, I better go run back to the television. And it was, you know, it was a 3-point game. And so I, you know, in Denver at altitude, you didn't expect to see it was Jokic that the one was tired, because, you know, those three big guys did such a great job from the Timberwolves against Jokic, you know, whether it be Karl Anthony Towns first and Naz Reid and Gobert. I mean, I would never have expected to see that. And you knew from the, you know, frustration from Michael Malone after the game, you know, not that it was incomprehensible, because I think they all tipped their hat to Minnesota, but it was just, it was nothing that you expected to see. So, yeah, shock was a good word.
Are we seeing a change in the guard out in the Western Conference? I mean, obviously, Golden State dominated for years, but they seem to be getting old and fading. The Lakers are a mess. I mean, to see these Minnesota, I mean, Oklahoma City had a great year. They were the top seed out in the West. No, I don't think anybody expected that. So, I mean, is the West changing as we before our eyes?
It is. It definitely is. And, you know, sometimes you like to wait a couple years so you don't make sure, you know, like Sacramento 2 years ago looks like it's the shooting star team, and then they take kind of a step back this past year. But you just look what Oklahoma City's done, you know, to bottom out, get all the draft picks, make good picks, make a good trade getting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And, you know, you look at Minnesota, like we said, that built their team to go up against the best team in the West in Denver. You know, I think Denver was a little bit flawed because, you know, they never really recovered from losing their sixth and seventh man last year. And, you know, it's hard to keep these teams together. They get very expensive. And, you know, guys make all NBA teams now. And next thing you know, you're paying a guy $70 million a year, you know, a third of your cap. And so it's not as easy, you know, to add on to these teams. But I think your premise is right. You know, the Lakers have been a bit of a mess. You know, we don't know who their coach is going to be or, you know, what they can do to refurbish that roster. Golden State is getting old. There's no doubt about that. You know, that's obvious to see. And that window we've been shutting for the last 5 years, even though they got a championship a couple of years ago. And so, you know, you see those three teams we saw at the top this year with Denver and Minnesota and Oklahoma City, and you wonder who may step up behind them. But it's always odd. I remember, you know, when it was Kobe and LeBron, and LeBron was becoming, you know, the best player in the NBA currently. And we're like, is this the baton pass? Is it this year? And it wasn't, you know, like Kobe was still hanging on to that. And then you get 2 years down the road and you're like, you know what? We were right in 2000, whatever it was, 9 or 2010. That was clearly the baton toss. And it feels like there's one of those in the West and maybe even overall in the NBA when you look at the best teams happening. And sometimes you can't confirm it for a couple of years, but it certainly has those signs.
My most important question for you, do you have your table reserved at St. Elmo's in Indianapolis?
PJ, I think, has a permanent table. I don't know how he does it. You know, sometimes we're at the game and, you know, he's got like three potential places and we're running late. There's a lot of video reviews. And next thing you know, it's like St. Elmo's will always have a spot for us, no matter what time it is. And I'm like, is that true? And we walk in, and sure enough, oh, Mr. Carlissimo, come right this way. So, yes, there will be some, even though I'm not a big shrimp cocktail guy, there will be plenty of shrimp cocktail devoured, probably close to the midnight hour at some point in Indianapolis on Indianapolis 500 weekend, yeah. Which I've only had limited trips to the city. I can't imagine what downtown Indy is going to be like on this weekend.
You have a hotel room at this point.
You know what? Shockingly, that was the big discussion. Like, we're going to be staying in Muncie. I don't know where they're going to put us. And somebody must have been smart at the worldwide leader of securing some rooms in this potential eventuality. And yes, shockingly, we do have rooms downtown somewhere for the weekend.
And of course, you get to hang with Mike Breen, Doris Burke, and maybe future Laker coach J.J. Redick.
That's a good point. I just got to sit next to him. I never seem to sit next to J.J., so I could never get the Woj scoop. I want a Kesty bomb. They don't exist. And I don't like to break news, but maybe it'll be this weekend. I can't.
Well, let's get back to you and our future Hall of Famer, Tim Reynolds, of the Associated Press. We'll chat NBA Finals when we get closer.
That's a good idea, and we got to come up with like some confetti or, you know, hail to the king or something, because yes, all of a sudden he's taken seven steps above us. I don't even know if we deserve to be on the same podcast line as the great Tim Reynolds, but if he allows it, that would be awesome.
Probably got agents. Yeah, we have to go through an agent now to get him.
That's right. I believe he got a raise too in how much he gets to work this podcast, so. You know, if he's getting the 12-cent check, I'm going to check with the union to see if I can maybe at least get a quarter or 7 cents.
Okay, I'll work with that part, right?
Work on it.
Kesty, as always, appreciate a few minutes, and you'll have game two tonight with PJ, and we'll be listening. So thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it, Ken. Have a great one.
That's Mark Cesaro. Coming up, we're going to talk NHL playoffs with hockey analyst Pierre McGuire. It's the conference finals in there as well. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity from the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Union College women's hockey head coach Josh Skiba. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and now we're down to the final four in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. And joining me now is Pierre McGuire, the hockey analyst, also co-host of the SICK podcast, the Eye Test with Jimmy Murphy. Pierre, welcome back, and exciting times now. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty here.
Ken, it's nice to visit with you. Absolutely. It's been a fantastic run so far through the first two rounds. I think a couple of surprises and some obviously really good series. I think a lot of people are probably surprised at how easily Dallas got through their series with Colorado. I think some people were surprised at how long the Vancouver-Edmonton series went to a game seven. And I think some people were probably a bit surprised by Carolina losing to the Rangers outside of the New York metropolitan area. And then I think most people thought Florida would beat Boston outside of obviously the Boston area. Yeah. Everybody thought the Bruins would win.
I have to admit, I underestimated the Dallas Stars. I thought coming off that physical grinding series with Vegas, I thought they wouldn't have anything in the tank. But I think it came down to goaltending. Ottinger was the better goaltender, and the Stars ended up winning the series in six.
You know what's amazing about Jake Ottinger? If you go back to the start of the playoffs, Ken, they were playing against Vegas, and they lost their first two games on home ice. And in game one, the shots were 30-15 in favor of the Dallas Stars over the Vegas Golden Knights. And Ottinger wasn't good. And in the next game, Dallas played better, but Ottinger wasn't very good again. They go into Vegas, they're down 0-2. Everybody thinks they might get swept. And then they run off three straight games and eventually win in a sixth game. But just amazing to think about, you know, what's gone on with Jake Ottinger from the start of the playoffs to now. He really looks calm, cool, collected, and really in charge of his game.
Yeah. And then Monday night, game seven in Vancouver. You play all year to get home ice for that game seven. And it took the Canucks until the 10-minute mark of the third period to realize they were in a game seven. They were down 3-0 at that point. They got a couple goals. But, what happened? I mean, just Vancouver just did not look like he wanted to be there.
I think they were shocked by the blood clotting injury to Brock Besser, number one, who's arguably their MVP this season, along with JT Miller. Those have been the two guys that really stirred it up offensively. Elias Pettersson clearly did not have a great playoff, and he did not have a very distinguished game seven. they're going with their third string goal, even though I thought that Shelov played phenomenally well the entire playoff that he played. It was not him last night, but still, I think there was a little knock on them. And I just think the wear and tear of playing hard, arduous series is not easy. And for Vancouver, you look at it, they had to play a long, hard series with Nashville. They had a bunch of guys nicked up in that series, and then they had to play a long, hard series with Edmonton that went seven games. And, I think when it's all said and done, fatigue got the best of the Vancouver Canucks.
And also, Connor McDavid was not a non-factor last night. I mean, it was other guys he didn't expect to scoring those goals.
No, Connor hasn't had a great playoff so far. Yeah. I think most people would agree that have watched the Edmonton Oilers. I think part of that is because teams game plan for him. They try to shut him down. The one place he is very effective is obviously the power play, and they've got that one play from him to Draisaitl, and Draisaitl shoots from that wicked bad angle on the right-hand side of the ice, and it causes a lot of problems for people. But no, you're absolutely right, Ken. I think the truth is that Connor has not had a very distinguished playoff yet. He needs to be better for them to take the next step. I don't know if they're going to have enough against Dallas, only because you know, when you look at the back end with Tanev now and the way he's played since coming over from Calgary in a matchup situation, of all the defensemen in the Western Conference right now, I mean, obviously there's only two teams left, but I would say even at the start of the playoffs, the guy that probably knew Connor McDavid the best is Chris Tanev. He had to play against him when he was in Vancouver, and he had to play against him when he was in Calgary, and now he moves on to Dallas. So in a matchup situation, he really knows a lot about Connor McDavid, and I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. The Rangers-Carolina series, Chris Kreider was not going to let that series go to a Game 7 the way he played in Game 6 with a hat trick and almost Mark Messier-like.
Yeah, I would say in a lot of ways it was like Mark Messier. I think the truth of the matter is on Chris, there's a huge passion to play. He's a phenomenal slot area player. That's where most people score their goals in the playoffs. He's an unbelievably powerful person on the forecheck. And his hockey sense and understanding of the sport has improved so much since he left the Andover Academy to go to Boston College way back when. I watch him now, and I marvel. I marvel at how good he is, what a great person he is, how hard a worker he is. I remember watching him and Garnet Hathaway play at Andover like it was yesterday.
Yeah,
it's almost 20 years ago, you know. And I'm watching, and I'm going, man, oh man. And what's amazing, Ken, he's played 117, I think, in his games for the Rangers, and he's got 47 goals. That's the most goals ever scored by a New York Ranger player. I think about that all the time now. Look at all the names he's passed.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. It really is. What a career. What a brilliant career.
Yeah, you mentioned Garner Hathaway. I'm old enough to remember when he played at Brown.
There you go. And you know what? There are a lot of good players that came out of that Brown program.
Yeah.
The team's very good, but they had a lot of players go on to play pro hockey. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. I mean, like I said, I mean, they – unfortunately, the community down there in Brown does not support. They have a nice facility there, me and Onatar. I think one of the more underrated facilities in ECC hockey. But it's one of those things where you wonder why people go there to play hockey because they're not getting much support. But as you said, I mean, they have developed a number of outstanding NHL players.
Yeah, and you're going to get a chance to see one of them play at RPI this year, I think, in Jordan Tenelli.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was running with his dad, John Tenelli, and he always comes to the games when they were at Union, and I had a chance to meet with him when he was inducted in the New York State Hockey Hall of Fame. And I also had a chance to Bob Nystrom the year before that, and I always tell them, I mean, a lot of people complain about that game-winning goal being offside. That wasn't the goal that was offside in Game 6. That was the goal. The problem I had with that goal is Pete Peters not giving much of an effort to get the blocker out there. But it was a goal in the first period that was the offside one that Leon Stickle missed. Yeah, I'm still bitter 36 years after the fact.
Well, you know what, Ken, you know what's amazing about that? I coached against the late Pat Quinn, who was the coach of the Flyers in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing in Vancouver one afternoon. It was a Sunday afternoon game, believe it or not. And we ended up winning the game. I was head coach of the Hartford Whalers. And Leon was one of the officials. And what was amazing to me, Pat would never back up on Leon. He kept giving it to me. And I don't know, that had to be 15 or 20 years later, you know. And he was just giving it to him. And we, you know, usually in the NHL, you don't shake hands with the opposition coach. But I walked under the tunnel at the old Pacific Coliseum. And I went over to Pat and just said, you know, I hope you're doing well and think so highly of you and you know, great game and all this stuff. And I said, we're moving on. We're playing in Edmonton in 2 nights, but we're going to stay in town tonight if you want to meet me for a drink afterwards. And Pat goes, that Leon Stickle's still not making the right calls.
That's a great story.
It's funny. Well, it's funny because, you know, you bring that up and not too many people remember that Leon was a linesman, but I have so much respect for Leon as well. I coach a lot of games for whatever reason. He was either a supervisor or an official, and so much respect for the way he carried himself. He was just a true gentleman. He may have missed that call, but I'm telling you, true, true gentleman.
Yeah. But like I said, I'm a longtime Flyers fan, 36 years, it still bothers me to this day. But
I get it. I get it.
But at the same time, that Flyers was a team in transition because, I mean, they were, you know, getting away from the Broad Street, you know, some of those Broad Street bullier guys. And, I mean, that 35 game on Bean Street really got them going. I mean, but you saw the Islanders, but they were going to be a dynasty anyway. So, yeah, it's you know, I'll take my loss and move on. But let's look ahead to this year's Stanley Cup Final Four. Let's start in the East. The Rangers in Florida got underway Wednesday night. this is going to be a physical series, a grinding series, and I can see this one going seven.
Oh, I don't think you're far off. The one thing that people need to know about this series, because there are probably a lot of the people in our listening area are obviously Ranger fans. The Rangers are slick through the neutral zone. They're really fast. They're the most improved face-off team in the NHL. They can really cause a lot of havoc with their puck possession game. But the problem is the Florida Panthers turn every game into a street fight. And when a game becomes a street fight, it's hard for that skill to really become pronounced. So for the Rangers, they've got to make sure that faceoffs really are a priority for them. They've got to have puck possession. They can't just aimlessly throw the puck in deep and hope to get it back. They've got to really make sure they possess the puck. I'm not a big stats guy. There are two stats that I'm really going to pay attention to in this series. One, faceoff percentages, one in loss, obviously. And if the Rangers dominate that, they've got a good chance to win. And the other one I'm going to watch for is puck possession time. If the Rangers are dominating puck possession in this series, then I think they got a better than good chance to win. But, and this is my but, if the Florida Panthers dictate on that hit clock, and if the Florida Panthers are within a percentage or two on the faceoff dot compared to Rangers, I think Rangers are going to have a tough time winning the series.
And I think the Rangers cannot afford to have Matthew Tkachuk and Sam Bennett get under their skin. If they do, that's going to be a problem.
Well, those are two guys that you're spot on talking about, but there are other guys that you got to pay attention to deeper in the lineup. And this is the thing that I think what Paul Maurice has done there is really smart. He's empowered guys to go out there and play a nasty game. And when they do take penalties, he doesn't bench them. A guy like Nick Cousins, who used to play for the Flyers, as you know, Ryan Lomberg, a kid out of the University of Maine, Kevin Stenlund is a big guy who's been a reclamation project, big, strong, physical guy, very good in the faceoff dot, elite penalty killer, but physical. Those guys matter, and they cause problems. So they insulate Bennett. They insulate Tkachuk. They insulate all those. Verhaeghe's another guy that's not afraid to play with edge. So that's a thing that I'll be watching for. And then I think the best thing is for the Rangers, that the faceoff situation and game – so improved from a year ago. And I'm going to give Michael Pekka a lot of credit for that. Michael went in there with Peter Laviolette this year, and he's done a great job with all the Rangers center icemen, starting with Mika Zibanejad and obviously going down to Vinny Trocheck and getting Alexander Wennberg at the trade deadline and even Barkley Goodrow. I think that's a huge part of what they're doing in New York is face-off plays, and Michael Pekka deserves a lot of credit for that.
Let's look over at the Western Conference. Dallas is going to be a busy time in Dallas between the Stars and the NBA's Mavericks. They're also in the Western Conference Finals there. So it's great times down in Dallas. They're going to, of course, taking on Edmonton in the Western Conference Final. I think you mentioned that Connor McDavid has not had a great playoff. He's got to come to the fore here. And I think the goaltending, it's going to come down to that. If Ottinger continues to play well and Skinner struggles, this may be over quick.
It may, and the fact that Dallas has gotten out of most of their series pretty quick, and they haven't had a lot of travel. And when you look at, obviously, Edmonton, it's been a little bit more travel. Edmonton to Los Angeles sounds close. It's not that close.
Yeah.
It's a little further than people think. But one of the things that I talked about a little off the top, playing Christopher Tanev and Esa Lindell, heavy minutes against Connor McDavid, I think is going to cause Edmonton some problems. So supplemental scoring is really going to have to matter for Edmonton. And if they don't get supplemental scoring, I think it's going to be a problem for them to win. So, you know, we've already talked about Draisaitl. We're going to talk about Evander Kane. Nugent Hopkins has to elevate his game. I think everybody knows that Zach Hyman's had an amazing year and a great playoff. So those guys still have to maintain. But if you're looking at dark horses for Edmonton, one kid to watch, I played at the University of Wisconsin for a good friend of mine, Tony Granato, Dylan Holloway, and he's a really good player. I would say the stats aren't very friendly to him right now, but probably in the last five or six games, he has been outstanding for Edmonton. He's been probably one of their most consistent players. So if you're looking for a dark horse type player to be a guy that can really elevate and help Edmonton, I think Dylan Holloway's your guy.
Yep. Well, we last talked, Toronto had not made any moves as far as the coaching situation, but Sheldon Keefe was fired shortly after being eliminated by the Bruins. And the new head coach is someone I covered with the Hershey Bears back in the day. And a guy I honestly, Pierre, I never thought was coaching material, but Craig Berube is going to be taking over the Maple Leafs. Is this a good move for them?
Well, the one thing, if you were to talk to Leafs management, if you were to talk to Leaf players, if you were to talk to fans around the team, they'll say the one thing the Leafs need, they need a kick in the butt. If there's one guy that can give him a kick in the butt, it's going to be Craig Berube.
Yeah.
I was around his team a lot in St. Louis. The year they won the Cup, I did every single game St. Louis played, home and away. And I would tell you right now, he was a big part of that, along with Jordan Binnington, by the way, and a tower of power defense. People forget how big and physical that defense was, led by Alex Pietrangelo, kid like Colton Parayko. There were so many big, Bobby Bortuzzo. There were so many big physical guys back there that made a difference. But what got them through, if you remember, Ken, and it was a game in Philadelphia in early January that year in 2019. Craig had just taken over and the team was floundering. They were in last place in the NHL. And they ended up winning the game in Philly. And that kind of was their departure point. They took off from there. But one of the reasons why they took off, they put this guy in that they didn't want in their organization, in Jordan Binnington. And Berube empowered him to play, and he did. And the team just took off. It was unbelievable. And being around them, that team felt they were never going to lose a game. They won a game 7 in the Stanley Cup final on the road when they should have lost that game.
Yeah.
If it weren't for Binnington, they should have lost that game.
That was amazing, that job Craig did there. Like I said, I knew Craig and Hershey. He was a fighter, not really much talent, but he made himself a great NHL career. I mean, he lasted a long time there. I know he had a lot of penalty minutes, but there must have been somewhere along the way he got the coaching bug in, because he was the head coach of the Flyers. Of course, at that time, the Flyers didn't really have much in the way of talent. And, of course, you know, the job he did in St. Louis, and now – Toronto hasn't won a cup since 1967. I was 3 years old when that was happening. So how much pressure is he under?
A lot. There's a new president there, obviously, Keith Pelley. He oversees everything. It's called MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Keith's involved with running their football team, the Toronto Argonauts, their soccer team, their basketball team, the Toronto Raptors, and their biggest property, obviously, the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's also involved with running the football soccer stadium, which is called BMO Field, and then Scotiabank Place, which is where the Raptors and the Leafs play, and all the concerts. It's a massive job, but I worked for Keith for a long time, 11 years. And I would tell you right now, he doesn't mess around. So they hired Craig Berube for a reason. That is, they want the country club gone. They want guys to pay attention to detail. They're going to be a well-run, hard-edged NHL team, and if guys don't buy into what he's selling, I think guys will be on the first train out. I really do. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. Very, very interesting to watch.
Well, let's see how things go in these conference finals, and we'll talk before the Stanley Cup final.
Thanks so much, Ken. I really appreciate it. Delight being on with you and your listeners. Thank you so much.
I always appreciate your insight, Pierre, and you know that. So appreciate it again, Pierre.
Anytime, Ken. All right. My pleasure.
That's Pierre McGuire, and I'll be back to have my picks for the conference finals and latest going on around the country or something like that. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Meet Andrew Waite. He's a dedicated journalist with a passion for research and a commitment to getting all sides of the story.
Whether it's a local issue or an upstate trend, I do the stories and interviews that shed light on what's important to you.
Stay informed. Read Andrew Waite in the Daily Gazette.
It's my job to offer commentary about what's happening in our community and what it means to our readers.
The Gazette, reporting based on accuracy and integrity.
It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Andrew Catalan of CBS Sports and formerly of News Channel 13 WNYT. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast, and I'll give you my NHL picks. I did very, very well in the second round going 3-1. The only one I missed was Colorado because, as I said with Pierre, I just underestimated Dallas Stars. So I won't do that again. So I'm 11-1 so far in this postseason. That's pretty good for me because if you had read my picks over the years, I usually screw up somewhere along the way and usually have a losing record. But my picks for the conference finals, I'm going with the Rangers in 6 and the Dallas Stars in 5. So that's my final pick. The Stanley Cup Final will feature the Rangers and the Dallas Stars. Well, there was no Daily Gazette auto racing contest last week because NASCAR had their all-star races. It will resume Sunday with the Coca-Cola 600. And when we have the auto racing contest, I'll announce the winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself. Do it for your family. And do it for your friends. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Mark Keschesser and Pierre McGuire for being on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X and Threads at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I am Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.